Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. By the time you hear this, it'll be Monday, the whatever date that's going to be, the 31st of March. We're recording on Saturday, the 29th. So a couple days early here. I'm going to be, you know, slightly distracted. I told Pete I had a couple of ideas for what we could do on the show, one of which was called See If Chad Can Pay Attention to a Podcast While He's Watching the Guardians play. We're going to be doing that. So we'll see how that goes. But in the meantime, Pete, we've had a couple days of real baseball happen.
Yeah, we have. I was watching the Yankees Brewers game today because it was the only game on. And in my favorite league, I have Nestor Cortez. My opponent has Jazz Chisholm and Cody Bellinger. So that's how that's going. But whatever. I'm just glad to have baseball back. It's nice.
I gotta say, in the Auto News Slack, people were like, "Oh, I can't believe I started." You know, I can't believe I started Nestor. I'm like, why? Why'd you start him? Explain this to me, Pete. If you started him, I mean, it's a head-to-head league, maybe you don't have a choice, right? You start your guys and try to get your stats. But like, man, an Auto News League
is
like
short. It's a short week. This
right.
This week only has, you know, like 5 days worth of games. Days worth of games, and plus the Dodger series where I didn't have anybody. So no two star pitchers. It's a 16 team league. So like in a 12 team league, I don't even know why you would roster Nestor Cortez necessarily.
Right.
But in a 16 team league, he's not even like my lowest percentage rostered pitcher. So I had to trot him out there. I also look, the Yankees through two games look great, and I'm a Red Sox fan. I get it, blah, blah, blah. But like, I don't think their offense is going to be, well, obviously their offense isn't going to be as good as it is right now, but I think it's going to be a top 10 offense, but I don't think it's some offense that you can never pitch against. So that's why.
No, I agree with that. It's not an offense I think you have to always run away from. I think the thing with Nestor is it's a homer happy offense. Right. Like they're not going to be huge on base guys, but even right. It's a homer happy offense. He's a bit of a homer prone pitcher in a homer prone park in what appears in the very, 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 very early going before there's any data to really allow me to say this in any meaningful way. What appears to be a homer happy season. Home runs are up. There was a tweet this morning and I see if I can find it again. That said, home runs per contact. It was home runs per contact. All right, 1 second. I'm gonna make sure I say this right because I don't want to say it wrong because that would be, you know, silly. And I know exactly where I can find it. I just got to scroll back through a bunch of other stuff that's happened today. This was last night. Did you happen to stay up last night and watch the end of the Dodgers game? The Dodgers Tigers. That was a fun end of the game. My wife was like, who are you cheering for in this game? I was like, I kind of want both of these teams to lose. Like, I didn't really want the Dodgers to win, but the Tigers and Guardians, you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
It didn't happen, but it was a super fun end of the game anyways. This is me stalling for time as I try to find this tweet about the home run situation out there. Goodness, where is it? It was early this morning that somebody shared it to me. And so I know, there we go. So Jason Collette, he tweeted out at apparently 3:43 a.m. Pacific time this morning. I don't know where he is. He's probably not on Pacific time, I hope. Home run per contact. So he says home run per contact, the percent of non-strikeout at bats in which which end in homers. So home runs per contact, spring training was 4.6%. So 4.6% of non-strikeout at bats ended in homers. Last year, the first 25 matchups, so roughly two games per team, was 3.7%. The first 25 matchups so far this year is 5.4%. And Collette says, the first 10 to 14 days of a season tells us what to expect with home runs. And so far, I mean, that's 5.4% versus 2.7% is up a ton. I then went and looked up home run per fly ball rate. It's at over 14.5%. It was like 14.6%. Last year, through the beginning of the season, it was like 11.6%. That was last year through April versus this year through, you know, 2 days. So it's not apples to apples. That was also before Saturday's games. And I suspect that number's gone up just by the existence of the Yankees. So, yeah, it does seem to be a homer happy season, which is probably something that's at least, I don't know if it's something I'm reacting to yet, but it's something I'm watching closely for sure.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, like, I don't know what you can really do about that at this point. The balls, I used to follow, like, oh man, are the balls juiced this year? Are they dead? Like, that was a fun thing to talk about the last few years, but it just seems so random that I'm not going to put much stock into it.
Yeah, I mean, I think here's the thing. If the ball is juiced or if the home runs are up for whatever reason, it's something to pay attention to only because it's going to devalue home runs from hitters, right? Like, it makes home runs will be easier to find. And it will also change the way I view pitchers, right? It really increases the value of ground ball rate and things like, and strikeout rate for that matter. But guys who give up balls in the air, like, especially if you've got a guy who you're like, oh, his high fly ball rate's high, but he doesn't give up a ton of hard contact. If the ball's traveling further, that can get real ugly for a guy like that. Sure. And these are the kinds of things that, like, you know, it's just like when we see a player starting to break out, right? They've got like three good games in a row to start a season. And you're like, oh, do I really buy into this breakout or not? If you don't jump on the breakout, then you probably won't, because somebody in your league will. And if you do, and you're right, you've bought in real low and done really well for yourself. And if you're wrong, you have to move on. It's a little harder to know what to do with this, but, like, if you make a bet right now that home runs are up and make trades, waiver pickups, whatever, based on that, you could set yourself up for some success if you're right. If you're wrong, you know, you got to be careful you don't take too big a swing at it, right? You don't want to be like, oh, home runs are up, so I guess Aaron Judge isn't valuable anymore. Like, that's not a good decision.
Based on not even two full games played for every team, it seems too crazy to, like, start embracing some kind of alternate strategy. But hey, you know, to each their own. I'm not going to do that.
In points leagues, where home runs won't be devalued even if they're up, I would be sort of interested in, like, I already have Max Kepler on a bunch of teams, but the guys like that, the guys who had really good rabbit ball years, could be an interesting buy, high fly ball guys. And the key is, if you're going to make that bet early, make a small bet, right? Don't, like I said, don't act on your feelings or opinions about Aaron Judge based on 2 days. But if there's a dude on the wire who you're like, if home runs are up, this guy's going to be really good, go pick him up. It doesn't hurt, right? Drop somebody you don't care about anyways. So anyway, regardless, this is, like I said, it's 2 days of data. None of this is, like, definitive or anything, but it is something I think is interesting and worth tracking. Before we go any further, though, this is episode 162 of the Keeper Cup podcast, and we've now gone 8 minutes without even talking about jersey numbers, Pete. This is real late into the show for us.
We're off to a hot start.
And it's not only because jersey number 62 does not offer a lot of meat on the bone. Interestingly, the two highest WAR players, according to Baseball Reference, in the history of the game to have worn this number at all, both wore it for one season, in what I know was one of their debuts, and the other one I believe was his debut. And this is common, right? Guys get called up for their debut. The number they'd really wear isn't available. They have to pick just some random jersey number because it's September, and whatever you're going to get is what you're going to get. Jose Ramirez, the best baseball player in the history of the game to wear the number 62. And second is John Lester. So we got a Boston guy and a Cleveland guy. And I know we typically are like, you know, who's the best player to have worn it for, like, at least a few seasons, right? And we could go down to Jose Quintana. We could look at, you know, 7 years of Logan Webb. I'm sure that makes you really excited. I know how much you love Logan Webb.
Nope.
But I'm sort of tempted to be like, you know what, Jose, John, you guys are important enough to us that one season is enough.
Sure. Yeah, why not? Lester may have thrown a no-hitter wearing that number. I'm going to look that up now. But yeah, why not? Joe Ramblin. I don't know when this is going to happen again, so let's do it.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think let's do this. Very high honor for Jose and John. I'm sure, well, I don't know where John Lester is. Jose Ramirez is literally standing at home plate at Kauffman Stadium right now. So he probably isn't listening, but although I guess no one's listening right now since this is being recorded for Monday. Never mind. This is what happens when I try to watch baseball and podcast while baseball at the same time. I say things that don't make any sense. Anyways, let's dive into our topic for today, which, look, you know, we were just talking about it, Pete, right? It's so early in the season. There is not a lot of data out there that you can look at and be like, oh, this guy's strikeout rate is like, we've talked before about like strikeout rate and swing strike rate and walk rate are things that stabilize pretty early, not this early. But there are some interesting exit velocities and bat speeds and stuff. And some of that stuff, like a new max EV, is really interesting. And so what I've done is I have pulled up the list of the highest exit velocities on balls in play so far this season. And I'm just going to roll through this list and I'm going to tell you who the guy is and what the speed was. And we'll discuss if there's something to discuss here. I will say that some of these guys we will probably just skip over because there's nothing to say. Sneak peek, number four on this list is O'Neill Cruz. He hits the ball hard. Like this, we didn't learn anything here. But let's start at the very top. The very top of this list, having hit a ball 116.5 miles per hour, the hardest hit ball of the season so far. It was not particularly high elevated. It was sort of a line drive down the line, turned into a single. Jordan Walker. So Walker, a guy that a lot of people, myself included, have been buying in on as a bounce back candidate. You know, he had that strong rookie season, was awful last year, ton of talent. He does hit the ball hard. He has hit the ball hard in the past, but not only does he have the hardest hit ball of the year, that's the hardest hit ball of his career. His max EV last year was 115.5. That was also a record for his career. So this is it. 116.5, the hardest he's ever hit a ball in a major league game. What are your thoughts on Walker, either related to or not related to this particular swing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the new max EV is notable. It demonstrates his power potential. This was a player who, it felt like every single prospect guru this side of the Mississippi and the other side of the Mississippi was saying is going to be like a top 10 pick. I remember the ADPs were getting out of control when it looked like he was going to break camp. And I mean, you said his rookie season was promising. It definitely wasn't not promising, but I think everybody was disappointed with what they got. And last year he was atrocious, obviously. So it's promising to see any signs of life. I think a new max EV, especially one as hard as this one, is good to see. And I think, like, what's important about this? Well, if he does get off to a hot start and through two games, you know, we'll take it. He had a walk in a single today, and it looks like the Cardinals are going to win. The more he continues to hit the ball hard and get on base, the more runway he will have on the major league roster. You know, we kind of talked about before how the Cardinals could end up being a little crowded with mediocrity. Jordan Walker has fallen victim to that in the past where he just hasn't hit. So he didn't play, got sent down, whatever. I think as long as he gets off to a hot start, that's a good sign for those who invested in him because he's going to get a lot of runway.
Yeah. I mean, he is, you know, like you said, he's got a walk and a hit today. The other thing that I think stands out through two games for him, in addition to the, you know, very solid contact, is he's yet to strike out. And for a guy who, you know, the 22.4% as a rookie was good. Right. And I think you talked about people were disappointed in his rookie year. I think if you were disappointed in Jordan Walker's rookie year, it's because your expectations were out of line, right? I mean, this is a guy who put up a 341 WOBA, 116 WRC plus, was 16% better than league average with the bat as a 21-year-old.
Hindsight is 20/20 on that one, man. I'd be hard-pressed to find anybody during draft season to project him for just those numbers.
I mean, I agree. People were way out over their skis in this, but like, I mean, look, we're talking, you know, this year, the big exciting rookies are, you know, I don't know, Jason Dominguez, Christian Campbell, Roman Anthony will be up. Like, you would take those numbers from those guys. Like, that's a good season. That's a good rookie season, right? And I think that's the thing is, like, people get this, I don't know, people get overexcited about, like, what could be. And it's like, yeah, sure, he could at some point, you know, be Aaron Judge or Mike Trout. Like, we're getting that same thing with Cam Smith right now. Like, there was that quote about he's the next 60 home run hitter, and people are like, oh, he's gonna 60 home runs. Like,
God,
He's not. Like, first of all, he probably will never hit 60 home runs. Very few people have ever done that. But, like, he's a rookie. It's not going to be easy. He's going to have to work his way up to being a star. Like, let's just... And if he, again, if he comes up and has a 116 WRC plus, like, people should be happy with that. But regardless, during that rookie year, whether you're disappointed or not, Jordan Walker, 22.4% strikeout rate last year when he was so bad, it went up to 28.1%. And his walk rate dropped from 8% to 5.6%. So you go from, you know, less than three to one strikeout to walk ratio to about a 5-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio. Like, that's a big shift in a bunch of plate appearances, right? You're taking a huge number of your plate appearances and turning them into either good or possibly good outcomes and making them bad outcomes. And so seeing him not strike out through the first couple of games is promising. And facing Pablo Lopez and Joe Ryan, it's not like he was, you know, facing nobody. So I like that. His swinging strike rate is down, which I think is good. And I do think there is something about, like, look, he is hitting the ball hard in the early going. I'm curious, actually, while we're here, I'm looking at Savant anyways. I just lost my search, though. That wasn't smart. Anyways, too late to do anything about that now. I'm going to go take a look at what he has done today. Yeah, he had his single was actually not very hard hit. It was, goodness, it was 80.6 miles per hour with a -5 degree launch angle. That's, no, that's a 190 XBA. That's not very exciting. But his other ball, he had a fly out. It was a little bit elevated, 32-degree launch angle, but 95.9. So another hard hit ball. There's some good signs and some things to be excited about here. And like I said, I don't think we've seen anything from him. You know, you shouldn't have seen anything from him through two games that you're like, oh, I was out on him, but now I'm in. But if you were like me buying in, I'm a cautiously optimistic. I think this is a good start. It's you know, it's not perfect, right? It's not like he's gone like 4-for-8 with 3 home runs and a double or something like that, but like, this is a good start. He's showing the signs you want to see. He's hitting the ball hard, he's not striking out, he's drawing walks. That's all good.
Yeah. I think to final note on him, like, I'd maybe be a little bit more excited about the new max EV and the decent start he's off to through two games if the spring wasn't so freaking bad. But yeah, like, I think we do have to acknowledge that spring training stats, blah, 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 blah. Okay. But it was bad. And strikeouts were a problem in the spring for him. So yeah, we'll see.
The other thing to note, if you happen to be in, have him in a 5-by-5 league, is he has now been caught stealing in both games. So, I don't think, yeah, at some point someone's going to be like, hey, just stay on first. Wait to see if somebody else can move you up, because that's not great. Let's get back to our list. The second, there's a tie between two players for the second hardest hit ball of the year. Let's talk about Corbin Carroll first. I think we can be a little bit quick on Corbin Carroll. That ball, by the way, that he hit, 115.7 miles per hour. It was a, looks like a sort of a line out to right, just a hard hit ball to right that must have been sort of right at Kyle Tucker. I haven't actually watched the play, so I don't know. Maybe I'll do that while we're talking. But the reality is, like, we know who Corbin Carroll is. He just roped a ball at Tucker. We know who Corbin Carroll is. He is a good hitter. He's had some ups and downs, but we expect him to be good. I don't think anybody would be surprised if he's good. I do think the one thing to maybe note is that this is a new career max EV for him as well. And given some of the issues with concerns about bat speed and power and the shoulder and blah, 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 like, it's a good sign. I don't know how much it changes anything, because if you either have Corbin Carroll or you don't, nobody's selling him right now. Or like,
yeah, there's not much to do there, but if you did draft him, it's great. He's elite. He's going to be elite. Right. I think, if anything, there's some relief because Eugenio Suarez is off to such a hot start. So, like, the Arizona lineup last year was so freaking good, but I had questions about, is that going to stick? Like, you know, Jake, why is the name escaping me? Help me out here. Outfielder, Arizona.
McCarthy.
Jake McCarthy. I kept wanting to call him Jake Meyer. I don't know why. Jake McCarthy like seemed to play above his head a little bit last year, even though I'm a fan. And Eugenio Suarez seemed to kind of bounce back out of nowhere. But I think Arizona is once again going to be really good. And so if those guys behind him are hitting, then it's going to be another monster season for Corbin Carroll.
The only thing I don't like about the Corbin Carroll, or not the Corbin Carroll, but the Arizona offense is Suarez, because I really want to see Jordan Lawler. I think Jordan Lawler's path was Eugenio Suarez turning back into a pumpkin. And if he's not going to do that, and we might as well, actually, I know I said I was going to go back to the other guy who's tied for the second hardest hit ball. The 12th hardest hit ball of the year is a home run by Eugenio Suarez at 111.7 miles per hour. I mean, is this just a continuation of what Suarez did the second half of last year? Like, is he just going to be a masher? Or are we just sort of waiting for, you know, look, he gets these hot streaks and it's going to end and then he's going to be done?
No, he got his strikeout rate back down last year below 30%. And it was above there the previous two seasons where he was kind of, you know, obviously a disaster. And I just think it hitting in Seattle sucks. Like, it's bad. And I don't think it's a surprise that before he went to Seattle, he was a consistent power producer. And it wasn't even that he wasn't necessarily a power producer in Seattle, but it just, obviously his numbers still kind of took a hit. And I just think he's in a great lineup now. Like, I think he's just in a good situation. He hits the ball hard. He's a thumper. I wouldn't expect, you know, a high batting average or anything like that, but could he hit 40 homers with over 100 RBI in that lineup? Yeah, of course he could.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 3 through their first two games. He hit 30 last year. The year before that was 22. The year before that, he hit 31 in Seattle. Actually, his first year in Seattle was his best season since 2019 and was better than his season last year.
But I'd say there's more going on there because him in Cincinnati should have been better than it was those last two seasons there. I think he was hurt. He must have been hurt in 2020. He only played
20
games.
I don't know. Yeah, well, 2020, nobody
pacing for
2020 was the 60-game season.
So. Oh, that's right. That's right. That's what that was. He still had 50. I mean, 15 homers in 57 games that year.
Yeah, that's true. He had a lot.
I don't think he's ever actually been. I don't think he's been bad. I think we gave up on him in 2023 because he played 162 games. Played every game that year and only hit 22 homers. And it was like, all right, well, forget about this guy. And he just kind of reminded us who he was last year.
Yeah, it's also interesting that 162 games that year is it's an outlier, right? He did play 158 last year, but you know, he played 145 in 2021. He played 150 in 2022. There's a 143 in there. There is a 159 in 2019. But like, he's had a lot of years where he has had 10, 12, 15 days off, which is, you know, not weird, not abnormal. Like that's a good thing. And I'm pulling up, you know, but so like maybe he ran out of gas or something in 2023, but although his splits don't really show that. July and August were his best months, so he did run out of steam, I guess, in September. I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. I think you're probably right. I think, you know, he is also like part of the issue with him, part of the reason people sort of responded the way they did to his down year in 2023 and then a bad start to 2024 is those were his age 31 and 32 seasons. And he doesn't strike me like he's going to turn 34 just around the All-Star break this year. He doesn't strike me as a guy who would age super well. Maybe I have to reevaluate that, right? But like seeing him at 31, 32 starting to lose it, perhaps it didn't seem crazy to think that we might be, you know, witnessing a decline as he entered his 30s. But at this point I think you just have to assume he's a solid power source at third base, because that seems to be what he is.
For what it's worth, in 2023 his and again, seriously, for what it's worth, because everybody's numbers look like this if they play all their games in Cincinnati, he had 22 homers in 2023 through 162 games. Like we said, he would have had 35 if he played all of his games in Cincinnati. So like, I think he was kind of just the same guy having a down year, and some people got a nice little discount last year.
Yeah. Fair enough. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll jump back up to that other guy tied for second on the hardest hit balls of the year list. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We're going through the guys who hit the hardest hit balls of 2025. As a reminder, we're recording this on Saturday the 29th. So this is games through Friday. This doesn't include anything, just the first couple days of the year. It does not include anything Saturday or Sunday by the time you listen to this on Monday. But the second hardest hit ball of the year was a double at 115.7 miles per hour by Ryan Mountcastle. I've been a Mountcastle fan for what feels like forever. It can't be that long because he hasn't been up that long, but it feels like I've been pulling for Mountcastle since like 2004, and it just has never quite all come together. The wall in Baltimore has been moved back in. Maybe that helps him quite a bit. It certainly feels like it should. What are you seeing with Ryan Mountcastle?
Yeah, I have quite a few shares just because of where he was going in drafts. I felt like there was maybe a little bit of a discount there because first base is so bad. It kind of felt like he was being overlooked. I wouldn't say that's like a ringing endorsement. I know that I started to, can't remember when my feelings for Ryan Mountcastle really shifted, but it definitely had to do with the wall being moved back. So now if it's moved up a little bit, you know, obviously that should help him. I'm just, I don't know. He's hit the ball really hard before. Now, this might be a new max EV, but it's not by much. It's like a mile an hour or something like that. He's hit balls like that.
Yeah, his previous career best was 114.6 in 2023. His fastest last year was 113.5.
Yeah, so like, I don't know. That could probably just be that he really got a hold of one this year. And, you know, maybe he hit the gym a little bit harder and had one less burger in the offseason. But it's not enough for me to really move on him. So I think he's still a guy who, I mean, I have a lot of shares of. I'm not dropping him, but I'm certainly not trading for him or anything like that based on this number. Whereas other guys, like, you know, not that I'm going to go out and trade for Jordan Walker, but I think it's more notable for players like him than it is for a guy like Mountcastle.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I'm watching with Mountcastle is despite that smoked double, his start of the season actually hasn't been very good. He's 1-for-9 with that double. He struck out 3 times in 9 plate appearances. However, he, in addition to that smash double, he has another barrel. He has another hard hit ball. So he's looking at a 50% hard hit rate, a 33% barrel rate through 2 games. I know. But like, he's putting the bat on the ball with authority right now. He is striking out too much, but that striking out too much is literally one strikeout, right? If he had struck out 2 times instead of 3, we'd be like, oh, his strikeout rate's exactly where it was last year, right? So like, I'm not super worried about that yet. I'm going to be watching him though. If he keeps hitting the ball this hard, I mean, yes, he's hit the ball hard in the past, but like last year his hard hit rate was 45.2%. His barrel rate last year was 8.8%, which was the lowest it's been since his rookie year. He's other years he's been 11.8, 15, 12.1. If he's bringing that barrel rate back up to that 12 to 15% range and that hard hit rate is up from where it's been, I am going to start to sort of nudge myself towards buying Mountcastle. It's just not a thing I'm acting on today. It's a thing I would act on in a couple of weeks, especially if the results don't follow, right? Like if you get yourself in a position where we're a week or two into the season and he's smashing the ball like this on a regular basis and the results aren't there, he becomes a really interesting buy low because I think he's a guy people will be willing to give up on. Right. One of the hard things with the buy low is like, you know, if Aaron Judge had a bad start to the season, which went out the door today anyways, but let's just say Aaron Judge was having a bad start to the season. Nobody's like, oh, time to sell Aaron Judge. He's not really doing it. And no one's even really like, no one's taking offers. Like if you make an offer to try to buy low on him, it's not going to get you anywhere. A guy like Mountcastle is the kind of guy who, if the start to the season is slow, somebody who bought him later in drafts might be like, eh, okay, this trade offer, fine. I'll move on from Ryan Mountcastle. And so you might be able to buy low on him. And so I'm going to be watching him for exactly that reason.
So one last thing, I guess, to end on with Mountcastle is I could see playtime becoming a concern. Yes, I do prefer him in a vacuum, obviously, to Ryan O'Hearn. Ryan O'Hearn had a nice game today. He had a nice season last year, and he hits from the left side. Pretty soon, they're going to have Gunnar Henderson back. That could move Mountcastle at least further down the lineup. I think he's been batting seventh. I could be wrong in that. Let me pull it. Roster Resource has him batting seventh. I don't have the box scores for the last two games in front of me. But he didn't play today. And that's with Gunnar Henderson still on the shelf. That could be nothing. That could be just an early season break. But like, the Orioles have so many options, right? They have so many players. Jackson Holliday is up. Kobe Mayo has to be a AAA because there's not enough room. Heston Kjerstad could get off to a hot start. And so if Mountcastle isn't hitting to start the season, that could become a little bit of a concern for me.
Yeah, no, that's true. And he does become like, if you're going to buy low, you have to buy low believing that the Orioles see the same value in buying low that you do. Right. Or maybe I guess that another team does. But yes, there is some playing time risk there for sure. Jumping back to our list of the hardest hit balls of the year. Fourth on this list, I mentioned it before we got started, but O'Neill Cruz hit a home run at 115 miles per hour. I don't mean to sound unexcited about O'Neill Cruz, but O'Neill Cruz hitting a home run at 115 miles per hour just isn't news. Like, yeah.
O'Neill Cruz hitting a home run. O'Neill Cruz hitting a home run at only 115 miles an hour actually has me concerned. I want to make sure he's okay. They should check on him.
Well, you can look into that. I think he's probably fine. But fifth on the list is a 112.9 mile per hour double by Seiya Suzuki. It is interesting that we went from like 116.5, 115.7, 115.7, 115, all the way down to 112.9. But yeah, Seiya Suzuki, 112.9 on a double off of Merrill Kelly, sort of a liner to left. Let's see if I can watch this one. Looks like he just got a pitch down and in and just turned on it, smoked it off the wall. I don't know. There's a ton to talk about here. I think you and I and lots of other people expect Seiya Suzuki to have a good season. And so he hit the ball hard.
Yeah. As long as Seiya Suzuki stays on the field, I think he's going to be pretty productive. That's a fun outfield over in Chicago.
Yeah, it really is. And Suzuki, so far as, you know, played a little bit more than everyone else. The numbers are actually not very good so far. But I'm not worried about it. In terms of how that exit velocity compares historically, it doesn't sniff being a career high for him. He had about 115.5 last year. 114.6 was his high in 2023. Yeah, he hits the ball hard. That's what he does. Next on the list after Seiya Suzuki is another guy who we probably don't need to say a lot about, and that's Kyle Schwarber. 112.5 mile per hour single that he hit off of who did he hit off? Oh, Mackenzie Gore, which I guess is notable because he made contact off Mackenzie Gore. Like maybe that's the only story here is that he was the only Philly who could make contact. But yeah, I don't know. Kyle Schwarber, he also hits the ball hard.
Yeah, he does. The one thing I'm watching Schwarber in the early season is not him hitting the ball hard. I want to see if he gets any looks in the outfield. But so far, two games, two appearances at DH.
Yeah, they've talked about it, I guess, but I don't know. We heard the same thing about Brent Rooker, that he was going to get some time in the outfield, and I don't think it's happened yet. So I guess we'll see. But yeah, seventh on this list. I don't know if this is an interesting name. It is certainly a name I was not expecting. But Derek Hill, who is on the Marlins now, in case you were curious, went down and got a pitch down and in out of the zone and turned on it for a 112.3 mile per hour double to left. What's more notable about this than just, you know, Derek Hill of all people hitting the seventh hardest hit ball of the year so far is it was off. No, remember, so down and in. He got down and around on a 96.1 mile per hour fastball from Paul Skeens to hit that double. Is that opening your eyes at all? Are you like, oh, Derek Hill? I mean, Hill was at one point an interesting prospect.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So was I.
he was more recently than you.
I've picked up Derek Hill in every league. No, I'm only kidding. I'm willing to bet that Paul Skeens had more to do with the exit velocity on that batted ball than Derek Hill did. That's no offense to Derek Hill, but if I'm in a 24 person league and Derek Hill is available, I'm probably picking up somebody else. So no, I'm out.
That's just cold, man. In a 24 team league,
trying to bring the people the truth. So in your 25 team leagues, go get Derek Hill. He's probably a nice pickup.
Derek Hill is, he does appear to have the starting center field job for the Marlins, which at least means he's going to get some run, I guess. I mean, as much as I'm giving you a hard time, like I'm not running out to pick him up either. He was an interesting prospect, but he's 29 now. He debuted in 2020. We haven't seen anything from him. He has had one season with a WOBA over 300.
If you want to have some fun with it, 172 plate appearances last year, you extrapolate that over, let's say, 550, maybe, you know, he gets a lot of run with the Marlins because he's their everyday center fielder.
He gets close
to 600. Well, it would have been a 2020 season if you just math it out. I ain't predicting that for Derek Hill.
No, agreed. Let's get on to number eight on this list. Interestingly, this ball was an out, but he had a big hit the other night. Randy Arozarena, a 112.3 mile per hour line out to the new Max Muncy, hit a rope the other way towards second that just it was almost more up the middle that Muncy caught. Arozarena did, however, hit an absolutely mammoth home run on opening night. Notable particularly for me because I was there with my son, and Arozarena is his favorite.
Nice.
His favorite position player on the Mariners. He clarified for me. I said, oh, yeah, he's your favorite player, right? He's like, George Kirby is my favorite player on the Mariners.
Good choice.
We went to Kirby's debut. So we were at Kirby's debut a couple years ago. And so that stands out for him. But he's been, just as a side note, my son has been an Arozarena fan dating back to his Tampa Bay years. And got to see him in the All-Star game when the All-Star game was here and was super excited to see him there. And so when they traded for him last year, he was just so excited. And then it didn't go real well. It wasn't bad. Arozarena was actually better. I think people don't really realize this because it wasn't like a great season by his standards, but he was better with Seattle than he was with Tampa last year, at least by WOBA. But he's off to a good start this year, at least off that home run. So are you buying a bounce back from Randy, or is T-Mobile just too much for you to overcome?
Honestly, I think for Arozarena, he's a little underappreciated. I don't think he needs to bounce back. I think when he went off with Tampa Bay and he had that crazy postseason and everything and all those homers over the course of like a month, whatever it was, everybody needs to recalibrate on who Randy Arozarena is. He's been a 2020 guy for four straight seasons, and he's going to go 2020 again. And if that's what you drafted him to do, I think you're going to be pretty happy. And, you know, maybe if he gets off to a hot power start with the exit velocities and the homer, that he goes a little bit better than 2020.
Yeah. And if you go back to the shortened 2020 season, he only played 23 games that year, but it's seven home runs and four stolen bases in those 23 games. Like, it's really five straight years of being 2020 caliber, right? I mean, and
that's every year of his career.
Right. The big thing that happened last year was the batting average dipped to 219. The on-base percentage was down from what his career numbers have been. And as a result, the overall line was down, right? I mean, this is a guy who has a career 341 WOBA. It was 320 last year. He has a career 124 WRC plus. It was 114 last year. A big chunk of that, though, is that he's a career 317 BABIP hitter, and he was 275 last year. Like, the BABIP went way down. He did strike out a little bit more, but he's never been like a super low strikeout guy. So I'm sort of with you. I think he's I think he was an interesting buy low through draft season. Whether or not you still could buy low, I don't know. But I think it's worth considering if you see him on trade blocks, if you're having talks. I think you're right. I think like you can sort of look back at who he's been, and he's still that guy. So yeah, I'm with you.
If you're concerned about how often he was thrown out last year too, because I mean, I guess it's worth bringing up. He had 30 attempts and he was thrown out 10 times. The guy doesn't care. He gets thrown out all the time, actually. Like, go back to the start of his career. He is always gunned down and he still runs. So if he has a little bit of luck there, because there can be noise with those numbers, then he could be even a little bit better than 2020.
Yeah, he's got 100 stolen bases and has been caught 43 times in his career. I think the only thing that would potentially cause me to have concerns about his caught stealing rate would be if Seattle just had a different philosophy on it. It was like, look, maybe they let you run wild in Tampa, but like, we're not having that here. When he went to Seattle late last year, 4 stolen bases, 3 caught stealing, he certainly didn't get any more efficient. That's for sure. It doesn't look like a lower rate given, you know, it was half as many games. It was a third as many attempts. So maybe a little bit of a lower rate, but not a lot, not enough there to read into anything. And yeah, we'll see. I don't expect him to steal any less. I think you're right. I think despite the poor results on stolen bases, he's just a guy who's going to run.
Yeah.
Let's get to one more name before we take another break. This is a guy who I think at some level people like have missed that he's still been a pretty good player. And that's Xander Bogaerts. Xander Bogaerts with a 112.2 mile per hour double off Reynaldo Lopez. This was a ball that it was down, but it's not at the bottom of the zone. It's over the middle of the plate and he just smoked it up the middle. Not a great pitch. Xander, if I go look at his Statcast data, 112.2, not a new career high, but it's his career high as a Padre. He had a few balls at 113 plus in his Red Sox days, but it is the first time he's been over 112. First time he's been over 111.4 since he went to San Diego. I don't think that's like, you know, that's not me saying he's back. This is it. We've got prime Xander Bogaerts back, but it's certainly not a bad sign.
No, I think, look, I mean, obviously I love Xander Bogaerts. I think San Diego is going to regret the contract very quickly if they haven't already.
Oh yeah.
But he was really good in the second half last year, especially for fantasy. So, I mean, he got off to that slow start after signing the monster contract, 32 years old. And I think we all just kind of thought like, yep, all right, now, you know, Bogaerts is on the decline, but his second half, man, he had a,
that wasn't, was that last year? Was it the year before his, I thought it was his first year there last year. Oh no, I'm looking now.
Yeah. He's been there. So he's been there since 2023, but last year, and his second half last year.
But he did the same thing in 2023. 2023, his first half WRC plus was 106 and second half WRC plus was 135. Last year it was 71 in the first half and 115 in the second. So he actually, like, his second half last year was not nearly as good as the second half the year before. It just looked really good in comparison to what was an atrocious first half. Yeah. But he's now done this 2 years in a row that he's started slow and kicked into gear later in the season.
Yeah, his first half in 2023, he was still on a 2020 pace. Like he wasn't,
he was good,
he just faster, but yeah, he was getting written off last year. Like it got really bad. And yet the most recent thing he's done has been really good. I mean, he hit 292 in the second half with 7 homers and he stole 9 bags. He ran 12 times, which for Bogaerts is not historically not the most common thing in the world, but he is a speed contributor when he's locked in. So I think he was a decent bargain. I don't know what I would expect this year and project out. And obviously I'm not going to put too much weight on this current exit velocity. I just don't think he's going to be a guy that hits the ball all that hard, but he could give a sneaky 20-20 and score a lot of runs. San Diego's really got to figure out that bottom third of the lineup though. Play Gavin Sheets, man.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it is interesting. Like his first year in San Diego, he stole 19 bases. That was a career high. He was only caught twice. His second year in San Diego, he stole 13 bases, which was not a career high. But he had only had more than 13 stolen bases in a season in Boston once, and that was all the way back in 2017. Mm-hmm. He stole 10 in 2015, 13 in 2016, and then 15 in 2017. So he's already got a stolen base this year. So he is running more than he did in his Boston days. That's possibly organizational. It might be it's the new rules are obviously a factor there.
Yeah.
The other thing is, as a guy like him, he doesn't really have to worry about his long-term health, right? Like if he gets injured, he's going to be extremely wealthy anyways. And he may also feel more like he's got to find more and more ways to contribute. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I do think guys hit a point where they're like, what are all the things I can do to make a difference? But yeah, I think people are undervaluing him. Like 15-15 seems like a pretty good bet. 20-20 certainly seems possible, and he's probably going to do that with a high average, right?
So would you rather Bogarts or Bobichet? Because for me, there's a chasm between these two for me.
In what way?
I would infinitely rather have Bobichet.
Yeah, I mean, I think the floor is lower with Bichette, but the ceiling is higher. And when we're talking about keeper leagues, like Xander, like we don't have to worry about the contract. The contract's awful. That's not our problem, right? We're not paying him. But he's still going to turn 33 right around the end of this season. He's clearly showing some signs of decline. I think where this exit velocity is interesting is it like that is the kind of thing that would decline over time. The fact that he did get that kind of exit velocity is at least a sign that he's still got something. But let's say they both put up sort of vintage seasons, right? Both Bichette and Bogarts. Bogarts is the one you want on your roster for the long term anyways. So not only do I think he has a higher ceiling this year, but he has way more long term value.
You mean Bichette, right? I think you said Bogarts.
Bichette. Sorry, did I say Bogarts? I meant Bichette. They need to have less similar names or something. So we can talk about
them. I think that's why I picked him. I was just trying to think of a shortstop and middle infielder.
Well, we get back into our list of guys who, we're going to talk briefly about a 101.8 exit velocity because Stephen Kwan just hit a home run. So good job, Stephen.
All right.
Not a guy who will ever show up on a conversation of the highest exit velocities, but he knows how to use the little bit of exit velocity he's got. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll round out our top 10, and we'll probably skip ahead to some other names. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We've gone through 9 of the top 10 hardest hit balls of the year. We already did number 12, so we don't have to talk about that one. Let's talk about numbers 10 and 11 together very quickly. A 112.1 mile per hour double from Vlad Guerrero Jr., a 112 mile per hour single from Fernando Tatis Jr. These guys can get bucketed together because those exit velocities are very similar, because they're both sons of former big leaguers, and because they're both good at baseball, and there's not really much more to say.
Yeah, I mean, this episode comes out on Monday, and every podcast I've listened to has talked about the same thing, so you've heard this by now, but Fernando Tatis Jr.'s comments on stealing bases I found to be really exciting as a fantasy manager. He is just a monster stud. He just needs to stay in the field. I think he's gone through stretches where he's been on the field and just kind of had bad luck because everything under the hood has still looked really, really good, but I expect Fernando Tatis Jr., if he plays a full season, to be a top 5 player, at absolute worst, a top 10 player. So the fact that he's off to this hot start, whatever, that's great. Vlad Jr., sort of the same thing, maybe not as high as like a guaranteed top 10 player, but there's nothing more to report there. And I think your list has not updated for today, unless you mentioned it in passing, but Aaron Judge did clock a 115 mile an hour homer, one of his three today, which also to me means nothing. He is the best player in head-to-head categories, in my opinion. And Aaron Judge, Vlad, and Tatis, keep them. They're good.
you'd be proud. My son did a draft. You know, he's doing one league this year. It's an ESPN head-to-head points league. He had the third pick just, you know, randomly. And he looked at the list and he was like, well, it says that if I'm third, I should take Aaron Judge, but I kind of think I would take him even if I were first or second. I was like, oh, Pete would be so happy.
Yeah, that's the move. In head-to-head categories, I don't get it, man. He's easily the best, in my opinion.
And that is who he got, and he's been very happy. So nice. Let's keep going down the list. We'd already talked about that was 10 and 11. We already talked about 12 was Eugenio Suarez. 13 on this list is Christian Walker, a 111.4 mile per hour single. We are also now getting down to the point of the list where like 111.4 is, it's good. There's nothing bad about a 111.4, but we're out of the range of like, wow, he did that.
Yeah.
For any of these guys. And, you know, 111.4, like, I mean, Walker beats that, you know, he will beat that this year. That won't be his max EV this year. So, anything you want to say about Walker, anything you're interested in him with his new home?
I'm thrilled he's healthy. It wasn't, I don't know, like I must have missed like 3 days of news or something like that, because I thought Walker and Vinny Pasquantino were going to start the season on the IL. Neither of them have started the year in the IL, and they're both off to pretty good starts. Walker in Houston, I think he's going to be great, and I'm thrilled he's healthy.
Yeah, that park is a good fit for him. And he's even commented on the Crawford boxes. It's like, I feel like you don't hear guys say that kind of stuff very often. Like guys don't often say like, yeah, there's a short porch, so I'm going to get myself a bunch of cheap home runs. And he was like, dude, I'm leaning in. And honestly, like I loved hearing that, because that's what he should be doing. He should be trying to hit that short porch and getting a bunch of cheap home runs. Speaking of home runs, a 111.4 mile per hour home run for Tyler Soderstrom. Soderstrom is my catcher in the Fangraphs staff league that you and I both play in. I was all over him where he had catcher eligibility, and sort of shied away where he didn't. And I'm having a little bit of regret that I didn't pick him up more places.
Yeah, he's he was a common sleeper pick before the season. I think in those leagues where he has catcher eligibility, which for me is not too many, but like you said, and I knew he does, definitely an exciting pick. The exit velocities are crazy. He cut down on the strikeouts. He just had a really, really good season last year, and he has clearly continued that into this year. And I would say Oakland's offense, especially, you know, in the new park and everything, like, I think it's kind of exciting. I don't think that's a terrible offense, which is what we've been used to now for a very long time. So you plug Soderstrom right in the middle of that with the pop that he has, even if the strikeouts come back a little bit, he's still going to be like a 30 to 40 homer hitter if he gets the play time. So, for players like this, this is where I get excited. It's important that he gets off to a good start, right? Cause there's nothing set in stone for Christian Walker, for Aaron Judge, for whoever. It doesn't matter what their start looks like. They're going to play forever. Tyler Soderstrom, you know, not a shoe-in to get at bats by any means. And yet, here we are, hot start. That's exactly what we were looking for as fantasy managers.
Yeah, and I think looking at that lineup, as you mentioned, their lineup for today, for Saturday, and this is, I think, basically what their lineup's going to be. The one switching spot I've seen through their first couple games is third base, but Lawrence Butler leading off, Brent Rooker, J.J. Bleda, Shea Langeliers, Soderstrom hitting fifth, Miguel Andujar, who's still around, hitting sixth. Luis Urias also still around, hitting seventh. And that's the spot that Gio Urshela has been playing as well. And then they have Max Muncy, the new Max Muncy, and Jacob Wilson hitting eighth and ninth. And honestly, like I'm not a huge fan of Andujar. I'm not a big believer that Luis Urias is suddenly going to break out. Muncy and Wilson, though, even in the eight and nine spots are interesting. And that one through five is good. Like that's not just like a, hey, it's the A's and look, they've managed to squeeze together five real major league players in the top of like, those are five good hitters.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to be very clear that I agree with you that Miguel Andujar is not good and not somebody I'm looking at investing in. But even he, like when we're talking about an actual baseball lineup and turning it over and keeping things moving, the last two seasons, he's been an above average hitter. He's had a WRC plus north of 100 for two straight seasons. And if he continues that for another season, that matters for turning over the lineup and getting those plate appearances. So don't pick him up in fantasy, but you know, he could be worse.
Yeah. And actually he's in that role, I think, as a platoon guy, because the other half of that is Seth Brown, who also is in that lineup sometimes. And the reality is, like, if he doesn't hit or if Brown doesn't hit, like, Colby Thomas hit a bomb in AAA last night, something like that. They've got talent, and they have more talent that could be coming. So mm-hmm. It's an exciting young team, and if they can pitch, they get real interesting. So yeah. We've gone through the top 14 hardest hit balls of the year. The 15th is Austin Riley. It was an out, but hey, Austin Riley, he hit the ball hard. I don't think there's a ton to say there.
Bounce back incoming.
Yeah, but I do want to talk about 16th and 18th. So 17th on this list is John Birdie. He had 111.3 mile per hour ball. I'm not super excited about John Birdie. If you want to talk about him, we can, but I'm going to sort of skip him. I just mentioned him because he is at 17th. Sandwiched in between a 111.4 mile per hour single and a 111.3 mile per hour single, both by Jarren Duran. And I will say, like, I haven't been low on Duran exactly, but there was a part of me that was like, is he really going to repeat what he did last year? Right? Like, we've known about the talent. We've known for a while what he is theoretically capable of. He really finally, truly, I wouldn't say even broke out, because 2023, he sort of had a similar season, but 2024, he put it all together for a full year in a way that we hadn't seen yet. But you know, he's 28, he turns 29 this season. It wasn't like he did this at age 23 where you're like, yes, this is just who he is. And so I think seeing him hit the ball hard is, I think, a pretty good sign, especially if you're someone like me who was a little iffy on what his long-term outlook was.
Well, I mean, the dude is completely jacked out of his mind. So the fact that he hits the ball hard isn't all that surprising. I think it's natural with any late bloomer to have reservations, right? I mean, I think all the way back to like Jose Bautista when he was hitting like 40, 50 home runs. It's like, wait a second, this is the guy who used to play for the Pirates. Like, I don't know about this. I'm not saying Jarren Duran is going to be as impactful as Jose Bautista. I think his final numbers are going to end up being exactly what you wanted him to be. The shape of how he gets there is going to be different because he is a little bit of a volume guy. I mean, the Red Sox lineup looks like it's going to be even better than it was last season, hopefully. And it took him 671 at-bats, 735 plate appearances to get to 21 homers. So, like, I don't think he's a power hitter, but I think he's going to volume his way to being exactly what you hoped he would be when you drafted him. Expect it to repeat.
Yeah, there's an interesting, I think, conversation to be had about if the Red Sox are as good as I think people expect them to be. And if, you know, Roman Anthony at some point is up, Rafael is still going to need time, Abreu is hitting, they still have Yoshida. Like, there's a lot of mouths to feed.
Some of those can starve.
Fair enough. But I don't think Duran sniffs 700 plate appearances because I don't think they let him play 160 games because they want him to play 20 postseason games. Right. And I am speculating, right? You're closer to Boston than I am, that as that outfield gets more and more crowded, and I do think we are not that far away from, like, against right-handers, at least, it being Abreu, Anthony, and Duran with Rafael on the bench. But I think Rafael is going to get enough playing time, and that's going to be with all of those guys getting days off here and there. And I think you probably end up with more like 150 games instead of 160 games out of Duran, just because he gets a game off every 10 days or so.
Yeah, we'll see, because that could balance out in another direction where the lineup is also better, so it's turning over more, and he is the leadoff guy. So if he plays 150 instead of 160, I don't think that really changes my feelings on Jarren Duran, especially, like, there's also the possibility the dude takes a step forward, which would be exciting. You know, if the early exit velocities are suggesting that, then that is, you know, something worth noting. I I'm not as high on Sadan Rafaela as it seems almost everybody else is.
I'm not at all.
He came up as a fielding specialist in center field, and it hasn't been that great, to be honest with you. So, like, I don't, for a contending team, I don't think that's a guy that eats up plate appearances from Jarren Duran. Even if it's like, hey, we want this guy to play in the postseason, the Red Sox got to make the postseason. They haven't in years. They've been bad. So I would be surprised if, you know, September 1st rolls around and it's like, oh, the Red Sox are 7.5 up in the division and Jarren Duran is going to take a beat so that Rafael can get in there, or Yoshida or whoever it might be. I think Yoshida and eventually Rafaela are just not everyday. I mean, Yoshida, obviously, because he's getting up to speed in the minors, but I don't think either of those guys have a future as everyday players for the Red Sox. As young and versatile and as sometimes exciting as Rafaela can be, I don't know. I hope they're in that position. I hope he's eating up plate appearances because they're so damn good, and he just doesn't get the runway because they want to rest him for the playoffs. I just, man, that's too pie in the sky for me at this point.
I last year in September, I commented in the Auto News Slack about Rafaela. I said, I quote, I think it's pretty unlikely he's a regular at this time next year. Probably not by like June. And I took a lot of heat from Red Sox fans for being low on Rafaela, not realizing how good he is and all this stuff. And I was like, I get he's a really good defensive center fielder, but like, they have too many options in the outfield. Too
though.
Many good bats.
Like,
well, he has been good defensively in center field, right? I mean, like, statistically, he's been fine.
He has not been what he is. This is an organization that went from like JBJ to having a spell with Kevin Pillar and stuff. He hasn't been bad, but he's, if you're going to come to the plate with a, 2.6% walk rate and a strikeout rate hovering around 30, you better be locking down center field like Kevin Kiermaier. He's not doing that. So like, I don't know.
He was in center field. I thought his center field defense was legitimately that good last year.
That good. I don't know. This is more eye test than I don't have the numbers in front of me. I have not been blown away by Sadan Rafaela's defense. I think he's a good defensive center fielder, but I'm not, writing this guy in as Kevin Pillar,
interesting.
Kevin Kiermaier, JBJ.
Looking at his fielding run value just as a center fielder last year. I think this is just a center fielder. I can't really tell. Because the problem is I'm having a hard time finding the right stats to look at that don't mix in his shortstop production, which was not as good. Right? His shortstop defense, which was also supposed to be good, wasn't. Just wasn't. So he was 19th out of 41 players in terms of outs above average in center field, but that is a counting stat, and I think he played a decent amount less than a lot of the guys above him. But that is still like not enough less to justify, you're right, him being sort of elite. He didn't show that. So I take it back. I think he's still a really valuable utility guy, and I think they'll use him as such. But I think Duran in center, Anthony in a corner, and Abreu as a platoon guy in a corner with someone else makes a ton of sense for this team long term. And we'll see how quickly they get to that long term. But with that, I think we've covered enough here. Some interesting names of guys who are hitting the ball hard so far this season. By the time you guys listen to this Monday, twice as many games will have been played and all those numbers will be obsolete. But hopefully it was still interesting analysis, interesting look at a few different players. And yeah, hope you enjoy the show. We'll be back with you in another week. Have a good one.